Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Tired of nicks, cuts, and bumps? It's time to ditch the blade. Nair, the award-winning number one hair removal brand, gives you silky, smooth skin in as little as 3 minutes. That's smooth that lasts for days longer than shaving. Easy to use, blade-free, dermatologist tested, and made for all skin types. Plus, discover our new sensational fragrances that turn hair removal into a whole vibe. Shave less, glow more. Find Nair at all major retailers.
If your hair isn't performing like it used to, the answer isn't another hat. It's a proactive approach. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement brand. It's also NSF certified for sport and the official hair growth partner of Major League Baseball, the only hair growth supplement trusted by the pros. Visit Nutrafol.com, enter promo code PMT, get $10 off your first month subscription, and you get free shipping. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code PMT.
On this episode of Project Big Screen, we have a humongous review for the year 2025. That is the second part of Wicked, Wicked for Good, including, as well in this episode, a review for Sentimental Value, one of the year's potentially best movies with some big Oscar nomination implications. We're talking about a couple of trailers that came out this past week, including the new Hunger Games trailer, which is tearing up trailer records for Lionsgate with over 100 million views. And then our big list. I'm not sure it'll make any sense, but it's top 10 movies to watch on Thanksgiving. All that and more coming up on Project Big Screen. All right, Project Big Screen, episode 8. Final, technically, kind of, sort of, episode of November. We are officially into December movies the next time we do this podcast or show, depending on where you're watching. And we are having reviews of some big movies these next couple weeks, and we're kicking it off today with Wicked for Good. The sequel is the wrong word. Second part of a two-act play that we'll get to that had a huge impact on the box office last year, but even bigger this year. And then one that maybe does not have much of an impact in the box office, but will have a big impact on award season, Sentimental Value from Joachim Trier, who has made some pretty good movies, but hasn't made many of them. And came out with another one, a much smaller release, a huge release off the top, Wicked for Good, and then Sentimental Value. We also have some decently big-sized trailers, some other movie news, return of Kevin Spacey news today.
It's not even Christmas yet.
I know.
You have to wait for his annual Christmas movie.
He couldn't wait one more month. Top 10 movies to watch on Thanksgiving, which if you're wondering what does that mean, we're not defining it. It could mean anything. Because it's an underutilized holiday for movies, not used enough. And when it is used, it's like a moment. So we're gonna figure out what are the best movies to watch on Thanksgiving, to kind of establish a good list, where a list might be easier on other holidays like Christmas or Halloween. But let's start out with Wicked for Good, now demonized as the Wicked Witch of the West. Elphaba lives in exile in the forest, while Glinda resides at the palace in Emerald City, reveling in the perks of fame and popularity as an angry mob rises against the Wicked Witch, along with some friends from the Wizard of Oz original movie. She'll need to reunite with Glinda to transform herself and all of Oz for good. Pun fully intended there, obviously, in the synopsis. 137 minutes long. It was shorter than the first movie, which is about an hour-ish, the Broadway show, the second act, while the first act is an hour and a half before a 15-minute intermission. So just give me some context there. John M. Chu, director, last did Wicked, obviously, last year. In the Heights before that, Crazy Rich Asians as well. Also was a director of the Now You See Me franchise.
Fact.
How can you not say that? I'd argue that his work with wizards in that franchise got him this movie, some might say. Based on the Wicked Broadway show, which has been a smash hit around the world, not just obviously in New York for years, but also based on the book Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch, which, like, it is Wizard of Oz fan fiction.
It's 50 Shades.
Yeah. Putting it bluntly. Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo back in their roles. Everyone's back. No real new cast members in this, with the exception of three lines from Colman Domingo as the Cowardly Lion.
Stunning.
Yeah.
Incredible.
How much money did he make for those those three lines? Millions? Like did they record it on FaceTime? Like, it just, it's such an odd thing to make such a big deal about.
Yeah, I gotta look up that quote from Chew again.
Tracking 151 million in the U.S. That's as of Sunday morning, the 23rd. Huge opening. Going to be the biggest Broadway show adaptation of all time. 228 million worldwide. So, liked it or not, it did have a big impact on the box office, which always good news. 70% from critics, and also wasn't deterred by some poor critic reviews as well, which I didn't think it would, but you never know. Sometimes that can derail something. 70% from critics, 95% from audiences. Audiences love it. 7.2 on IMDb, Metacritic 58, Letterboxd 3.8. Kenjack, you're up first. What did you think? And also give some context to, I think everyone should, just what you thought of the first one as well, because I do think that might play a little bit into how much people like the second one, potentially.
Sure, yeah. No, I liked the first one quite a bit, and I was one of the, I would say, the bigger haters when we initially talked about the trailers and stuff, because it looked super, very sloppy in those initial trailers for the first one. And I was super, I was proven completely wrong. I think that all that stuff was super minimized, and that it really emphasized everything that was, at least from people I know that have seen the play, really great about the play. You just get these two people dueling voices, and you just kind of get that sort of, I don't know, dueling banjo performance between Erivo and Grande, and that was the highlight, and I think that made that movie so great. Like, I think I was in, like, upper 80s, 90s on the first one. I forget my exact score. This one, I think, I think that what's good about this movie is a lot of what was good in the first. Like, the Grande and Erivo stuff, like, they're born for these roles. Like, they're so good. And whenever they're together, whenever they're singing, it's great. And I think the weaknesses from the first are also mostly the same. CGI, I think, is still abrasive to the point of being, like, anti-artistic. And Goldblum and Michelle Yeoh are, like, two great actors. I think they're so miscast still in this, and that was super emphasized, especially when they're forced to sing more in this one. But now there's just new issues in this movie, which I think a lot of people have pointed out. I feel like ad nauseum, and I echo some of it, and I have some different ones, I think, too. Like, there's just a lot of filler between point A and point B. It's very jumpy, and there's just, like, not a lot for anyone else in this cast to work with, which is whatever. Again, the highlight is the other two, but that was kind of a bummer. And I think the second the storyline from Wicked, which is interesting and new and different, the second it starts intersecting with the Wizard of Oz storyline, it goes downhill, like, really fast. And I think those two things just couldn't coexist. They're, like, on completely different frequencies, and as far as the digestion of the material. And I think it got really rough after that. And overall, I think that this might just be the ceiling for what they have to work with, based on what everyone I've read have said about it and all that stuff. But I just think, just because that's the ceiling, doesn't make it a good movie. Like, I'm landing on like a 55, I think is right, perfect for this. Like, it's because it's not awful by any stretch, but it's just, it doesn't really hold a candle to the first one to me.
Before we go to Clemmer and Gooch, like, I do think it's worth noting, and again, this is not an excuse for it, but, like, this is, like, a pretty commonly shared opinion on the Broadway show, right? The second act is just not as good as the first act, whether it's the songs, whether it's the story and how it all comes together. And so, like, this isn't, for many people who are, like, diehards of Wicked, this isn't, like, a huge surprise that, like, oh, this is a step down. It's just a varying degrees of, like, how much you kind of see that. Clemmer, what did you think? What'd you give it?
Yeah, so I've seen the musical. I like musicals. I didn't really like Wicked, the musical, on Broadway. And I agree with what you just said, Jeff, where the second act is not as good as the first. Didn't really even love the first that much. I really enjoyed the first Wicked movie. I have it, like, I don't know, 80. But I thought it was a big improvement from the musical. I was really impressed with it, just how it looked. And I loved the story. I thought how they really were able, they had more time to flesh out the story of Elphaba and Glenda, and I thought it worked really well. This does not work well. I have this as a 48. The problem is, and like Ken Jack said, there's so much mental gymnastics and, like, sweat and work to make this tie into the Wizard of Oz for no reason. And when I say no reason, I mean, like, the best thing about the first one was that relationship between the two characters. That's all we need. We don't need to have people turn into the Tin Man and Scarecrow. I don't need any of that. And I don't think anyone wants that. What everyone wants is they want to see the relationship between Glenda and Elphaba. And when you start having these other plot mechanisms that are just so hard in mental gymnastics to pull off that you lose the relationship. You lose what we care about. I mean, there's very few scenes in this movie of Elphaba and Glenda. They're not in the movie together a ton, and it really hurts the movie. There was a lot of talk of Ariana Grande winning an Oscar for this. She's very good in this movie. She's fine. But this is a ridiculous, silly movie. There's no reason for her to be winning an Oscar here. And the idea that this could get a Best Picture nomination kind of turns my stomach.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Oscars with it, because I do think its odds for all but one category shifted pretty mightily. And like, if it does get a Best Picture nomination, where last year it was like kind of like a sneaky dark horse, and I thought it was good, it would be a dark horse to win. Like, now it's just a matter of like, it'll probably get one, just in the same way that movie, like
technical, like costumes.
Right. It'll probably get one for just one, just its impact. Two, because it's kind of just been around all year pre-release.
That's just so disappointing.
With that said, I will be stunned if it doesn't get nominated. It's just one of those movies. Like, it's terrible. Happens every year. It happens every year with these types of movies. Now, the difference being, though, its impact on the race is zero now compared to what I would have said like a month ago or last year's, which last year's, like, it probably wasn't going to win, but it was one of those ones we were like, you know, that's kind of like hanging around a little bit. That's like the big difference.
Would it get a nomination because it's such a box office behemoth and they want people to watch the Oscars? Does any voter think like that?
Well, they're going to have her do like, yes, a performance for sure. Like they want them all there doing all that shit.
Also, like, are we going to be honest? Are we going to be serious? Like, this is going to piss people off, but like, fucking Barbie got nominated a couple years ago.
Yeah,
like, and Barbie was like, yeah, a Barbie lot better.
Barbie was a better movie than this. Like, Barbie,
let's be real here. Let's be real here. In the grand scheme of that year, Barbie, I mean, I don't think Barbie had any business of being nominated for Best Picture.
No, but I can at least make a case.
It happens every year, though, is my point.
But I can make a case for Barbie on some level. I have a really hard time making.
That's
a case
fair.
For this. And I think the first one should have been nominated. That's fine. This is just such a huge drop off for me.
Every year there's one, and I'm just telling you, this is the one. Like, this is going to be another, the one.
There's no other real box office destroyer that I think is Avatar 3 to get up there. Yeah, no.
you don't think Avatar 3? Now,
for Best Picture, I don't think it's gonna get, I think, nominated. This would get nominated.
Are you insane? Between Avatar for Good and Avatar 3, they would choose Avatar
for best,
3.
For Best Picture, you think they're going to go for Avatar 3 over?
I Way of Water got nominated.
That was a different year. It's a different year.
I don't know if I actually would disagree with that. If you told me that there was a head-to-head, I would not say Avatar is the lock on that. I'm just telling you, like, that's just like, this isn't even an opinion thing. This is just, I'm telling you, you can read the tea leaves every year. It goes the same fucking way every year with the Oscars.
They're both getting nominated.
Is there, I guess with 8, right? It's different, but like,
I'm telling you, it's not, I think Avatar will get nominated. I'm just telling you, it doesn't. You read the same tea leaves every year. Here's the thing: if Wicked last year hadn't come out, this one doesn't get nominated. It's just one of those things. Like, it's riding the coattails of the last one. It's been in people's brains all year. I mean, it's the same thing with Emilia Perez last year. Like, once it hangs around, it just fucking hangs around. Whether you think that's crazy or not, I mean, that's also the flaw with the Oscars, right? Like, I love the Oscars, and like we can pretend all we want that it's like the Super Bowl of movies, but it's all horse shit. Right, like it's all
nominations
bullshit.
Matter. I think the nominations provide a real context of what happened that year.
Maybe, but I mean, like, Golden Globe looked like fucking like War Horse. So Steven Spielberg didn't break War Horse. War Horse would not have nominated for Best Picture. But yeah, that's just how it is. Like, that's just how the game is. That's just how it goes.
Yeah, right. It's up there.
Again, it's like, it's one of those things where like, I hate to admit that's how it is, because like, I love the Oscars and I love pretend. And like, when, you know, over the years when Ken Jack and I did interviews and we'd have actors come and be like, the Oscars is fucking horse shit. And I'd be like, what do you mean? But like, yeah, I mean, it is. But like, that's just how it goes.
Gold Derby has it right now at 7 and Avatar at 9. And there's other ones in here, which is like Frank.
Oh, and it's, I mean, don't get me wrong though. Wicked odds dropped significantly. Like if it,
yeah,
if
it, like, it went down 10%.
I'd be stunned if it missed. But like, now where like 2 weeks ago, I was like, like, you know, if this is good, it might have a chance. Now it's like, again, its impact on the race is like, it's going to have like a montage during the show being like, this is one of the nominees. Like, that's about it at this point in terms of Best Picture. Gooch, what'd you give it?
I enjoyed the first. I think I gave it about a 70. I think Cynthia Erivo, Ariana Grande, absolutely incredible. Like, two of our best vocalists, like, living right now. And that is such a strong soundtrack, especially in the first half, where they get to just show off and they get to collaborate together within the movie and within those songs, and it just works. I do think it doesn't look great. There are parts that look good, especially in the practical sets. I don't love the way they shot them, but like the world building is there. I don't love everything about it visually, but it's serviceable. This movie, and by the way, I did finally see, I've been entering a lottery to see Wicked on stage for about 5 months and somehow finally won on Wednesday. So I saw it the day before I was going to see the movie, which was great context because I was like, holy shit, this is what happens in the second part. This is the second part of Wicked. How are they going to fix this for the movie? Like, what are they going to do to make it work? And it turns out they're just going to make as true of an adaptation as they possibly can, which, holy shit, that was the wrong decision because it's just incoherent for the most part. Like, it really is incoherent. And a lot of this stuff works in a Broadway play where you're watching people on stage, things move a little quicker, and you're asked to use your imagination. You forgive a lot of the, you know, background noise that doesn't really line up with any kind of, you know, world building or anything that makes sense in any way. Here, when it's happening on screen and you just jump from scene to scene with no sense of time, there's no, like, if you try to think about this world for even 2 seconds, it just crumbles and makes no fucking sense. And those problems are exacerbated here because it's not an 1 hour second act, it's an over 2 hour movie. And the songs aren't that good. And then you have Jeff Goldblum and Michelle Yeoh, I mean, this is a Tom Hanks. Is Tom Hanks and Elvis level. This is like a great actor derailing a movie at points.
I actually liked Goldblum a lot more in this one. Michelle Yeoh is worse though somehow.
Yeah, I can deal with Goldblum. Like, I can almost deal with some of his singing, even though I really love
the original Wizard is an old putz, like in the Wizard of Oz. So that is like he is, but Michelle Yeoh, wow, wow, yeah, she is really bad.
They shouldn't have had her sing. That's not fair to her. That put her in a bad, that she can't succeed there.
I don't know why they would do that to her. Like, it's honestly
either. That's not right. I honestly felt bad for her during it. Yeah, I'm like, that
obviously there's a huge connection between John M. Chu and and Michelle Yeoh. That's obviously why.
You know, she should play the part. Don't have her sing. You can't.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah,
the singing was not right. That was
a surprise. Have him do, like, remember when Pierce Brosnan did like that song "Mamma Mia" that where it was like not really singing.
That's kind of what they have Goldblum do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a fine play, but you shouldn't have had her sing. That was
what did he sing in "Mamma Mia"? He sang SOS.
Yeah,
he talked it while the music played. Yeah.
Walking around the little highway.
So bad.
So yeah, so this I think it honestly looks worse because you're using a lot more CGI. They added a lot of CGI animals. There's not that much animals in the second act, and they added a lot of animal stuff here, and the animals do not look good. I don't think the songs are as good. You don't get to see really Elphaba and Glinda on screen singing together for much of it, or even interacting with each other for much of it, because they're on their own paths. And so it pulls back a lot of the strengths from the first, and then, you know, turns up a lot of the problems with the play to something that I just really, really did not enjoy. 35 out of 100 for me. I really did not like this movie. I think it's bad in a lot of ways. It felt to me like a bad Marvel sequel, like an Iron Man 3. Like, it feels like one of those. Like, if you don't know about this universe and you're not, like, fully bought in, it's not going to make any fucking sense to you, and it's going to be grating.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was a huge step down. I'm definitely the highest out of the group, but it's still, like, a failing grade for me. Like, I love the first. I gave the first a 91. I think the music, again, I'm an all-time, like, I can excuse a lot. It's the Charlie's Mom from Willy Wonka paradox for me, where it's like, yeah, that exists, but I'm going to ignore it. Call it fair or not, I'm going to ignore it. I won't ignore the magic in Now You See Me, but I will ignore, like, Charlie's Mom singing. And I can ignore enough in, like, the last one where it's like the highs of the last one are unbelievable. Yeah. I think Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo are, like, two of the best casting decisions we've seen in any, like, property, like, franchise, like ever. Like, and I don't think it's an exaggeration. Like, they're unbelievable. Like, Ariana Grande, obviously, like, if you followed along, has wanted to play this role since she was born, basically. And Erivo's voice is kind of unmatched. So, like, I think all that works in here. But it's just not as good. It's just a big step down. And I'm sure, like, right now I'm at a 65. That's a movie that I could probably watch again. I'm going to see it again at some point. And it's like, it'll never go above that again for me. Like, it's probably only going to age worse, but it's in the 60s for me. Like, I enjoyed enough of it. And I do like a lot of the songs in this. I don't know if it's a bias because I'm overly familiar with the show. And I just like some of the songs, like some of them in here work for me. And I do enjoy them. But it's definitely a step down. And I think if you have two people in those roles that are not as good, it's an even larger step down. Like those two alone, Arrivo and Grande, are worth like 20 points. I think they're just both so good in what they do. I mean, I do also like Jonathan Bailey, by the way, but also just not his movie. So you're going to get less of him.
Is he in this?
He's a no show.
You're just not going to get as much of him.
Very strange to recast him with Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah. So everyone's saying that, right? That the scary. Yeah. also, if you can see this in a theater with a lot of people, this is impossible to do. But if you can find a way to see with people who have no idea who becomes what in these movies, absolutely do it, because the reactions are fantastic. When you hear someone go, "No way!" They're like, yeah. "Oh my God, the Tin Man! What?" It's you get some good reactions out of it. So yeah, I mean, everyone failing all around, which again, like, it's a huge drop off. And there are some rumors that this was going to be good, and it didn't really come close. It's this weird mix of feeling both overstuffed yet stretched out. It's bizarre. Like on one hand, like, it does feel like it's too much. It almost feels like they tried to distract from how overstretched it is by doing so many different little things. I think when it's good, it works, but unfortunately it just doesn't have as many moments as the first one does. And again, the music is just not as good. I think there's some really good songs. I think Four Good's a very good song. I think No Good Deed's a good song. I think their new songs are not great. I think they clearly, like, Ariana Grande's song. Actually, I don't mind Ariana Grande's song. I don't mind
Arrivo's song is
Girl in the Bubbly. Arrivo's song is bizarre. It's like, it's,
what's it called? No Place Like Home.
No Place Like Home.
Arrivo's song makes sense if she's gonna sing Defying Gravity later on, because they're like, hey, let's not waste it. Though I guess you could also say that that's a bad statement, because The Wizard and I is a song that exists in the beginning of the last one, which she has a very powerful voice and big moment in. So she has two of those. But like, it's almost like you give her that song because it's like, hey, let's not blow her big moment. But then, like, No Good Deed's a big song, but like, that's not like her big moment in comparison. So it's bizarre they gave her such like a mediocre song to not show off her voice. But it raises kind of the big question. This is not like a spoiler movie. Like, I don't really know what to tell you at this point. If like, you don't know what happens with Wicked.
I don't know what happens. I still don't know.
it's largely, I mean, it's basically just like an offshoot of The Wizard of Oz. It's Lion King 1.5, right?
But it can't be. That's the whole problem, though, Jeff.
But here's the big question. I actually don't agree with what you said, Gooch. I don't think this was the wrong choice. Now, let me put it in context. In the end, what's the goal here?
Make a good movie.
Right. They have to do one thing. They have to make these two movies, and they got to make money off of it. Mm-hmm. You could change a lot of it. I think if they change a lot of it, though, and it's bad, they are looked at as making like worse than Cats failure in terms of movie decision, because you are now going against a beloved thing and you bombed out of it. And then what people are like, why don't you just do the fucking Broadway show? Like, why don't you just do it? Like, I get what you're saying. Like, don't get me wrong. In a perfect world, like you or me, right? Or any of the four of us, I'd rather them swing and miss. But the consensus of like the mainstream audience, like they just couldn't do that. And I'm not saying that's an excuse to be like, you know what, the movie's good because they, you know, that's like the problem. I'm just saying, like, that is like, that's the predicament they're in, right, Clemmer? It's like they're boxed in for the most part, because I don't think they could have logically. They're like, what else could they? Could have made it one movie, right?
But they,
like,
made the right choice.
Right, they did. Because
this is making money. It has a cinema score of A. Like, they it's not.
And the first one will exist forever. And ending that movie on Defying Gravity was absolutely, instead of like trying to tack on another, that was the right move. Because it will always, like, that always has an impact. It's this weird, it's one of the more fascinating movie, I think, discussions in recent memory. It's like, what could they have done? But like, also, would it have been smart? I don't right, Clemmer? Like, I don't think it, I think it was the right call, even if it failed as a movie.
So they made the right call. The problem is the entire thing is flawed. And Gooch kind of said it. Gooch just saw the musical. He's like, if you think about it for a second, it doesn't make sense. Because the Wicked Witch in the movie is not good. She's horrible. And there's no, like, if you watch the real Wizard of Oz, you can't connect. Elphaba is never good. It doesn't make any sense. And then when you, we're talking spoilers already, but then you have like we're supposed to believe the Scarecrow is singing, run around singing "If I Only Had a Brain," and never brings up the fact that he knew the witch.
He fucking the witch. He was fucking the witch.
The Tin Man is not saying he ever knew the witch. Like, it doesn't, like, the whole thing is just, it's a way to kind of make the Broadway.
It is what we said it was. It's a weird offshoot fan fiction. Like, it is.
It is. And it's also, like, if you go to enough Broadway musicals, you know the second act is usually pretty rushed, and they need to connect everything together, and it is often kind of a mess. But whatever. But this is even worse because it has to tie to a 1939 classic movie that everyone has seen. It doesn't work. It's always flawed. But to Jeff's point, they made the right decision. 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. A cinema score. It's made $40 million more this weekend than the first one did. People like the people that are supposed to like this movie do like this movie. We don't.
You know what I would say it was the wrong decision, though? If the first one was bad. But the first one being good, I think that was like, I mean, you know what the best decision would have been? If they would have just made the first one and never made anything else after that. That would have been, now that's a move, right? Now that's not realistic. But like, then like, its place in movie history, it's like, okay, that's different now. But it's like, I've thought about it for days now. I'm like, I just don't know what like the logical, because again, it's like, right? Can you see that, Gooch? Could you imagine if they did swing and they just whiffed? Like,
but if you swing and you whiffed, hit, and you create something that's so much more iconic and memorable, it's not just the Wicked play. It's not just about how much is film adaptation. It is something that's new that has its own fandom and creates a whole new generation of fans.
But realistically speaking, what do you think the chance like that is a? I mean,
no, but you have the chance here.
Tank Universal with that. Like, I hate defending it like in this corporate sense, but I do get it. Like,
you already had him hooked from part one. You could, the problems are that are exist in the musical are 90% in the second half. You had him hooked with part one. You could have made some fixes here, especially towards the end.
You need to keep doing, though. This is a $1 billion movie. Like, you can't fuck this up. And people and
Gooch, did you think people weren't going to show up if they
won't watch it again if they don't like it?
I would be interested to see how the legs on this compared to the first one.
But they like it though, Gooch. We don't like it. They like
my 9-year old niece hated it. I'm not buying into this Rotten Tomatoes popcorn score where Chris is getting 100% on that. Like,
how about
come
cinema
on
score?
Everyone that I know for the most part does enjoy it. Did enjoy it and did like it.
Yeah, me too. My wife fucking loved it. She's like, oh, I got so much blah blah blah. Like, not
as much as the first, maybe not. But yeah.
I struggle to see how that's going to tank Universal. If part one made $1 billion, people were going to show up to this no matter what. People were showing up to this movie no matter what.
I think to Jeff's point, though, like there is a sort of thing in the world right now where like you're not going to get any grace if you swing and you miss with this. Like, you will get shit on eternally forever. And for them, it's no longer like you're adapting like a play, like a small time play that you're turning it like some Sondheim, whatever, and making it into like some piece of art. You know, this is more of an IP. This is Marvel, you know what I mean? And so it's very harder, a lot harder, I think, for Universal and for Chew to like,
they certainly want it to justify. Be Marvel.
That's what I'm saying. They want it to be that. They want it to be a moneymaker. They don't want it to be art, which I think is totally different. And I think that's where the goalposts that we have in mind for this are different from what Universal and maybe John Chu had in mind for it.
Right. Again, the four of us, it's different, right? Like, I hate The Rise of Skywalker. The Rise of Skywalker was a pandering, stupid, and that to me will always baffle me. Because I'm like, why did you do that? You didn't need to do that because you were basing it off of new things, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not defending this movie not being as good because I'm just saying, like, I can't get upset about this like I would with other things because I just, like, I get it. Like, I totally get why they went this way. Would I have been better off, like, as like me or maybe you, Gooch? Yes, we would have definitely, like, we'd much rather be sitting here being like, man, they, you know, the Tin Man killed himself. I don't know, like, that's just crazy. It's like, right, like that would be like, that didn't work, but like, I respect that, but I do like,
make sense.
I get it.
Make it make sense. Make there be a message in them. What is the fucking message of this movie? What is the message of this movie?
Don't judge a book by its cover.
The two of them change for the better. Like,
does she? She sends her into exile. The whole of Oz is like, oh yeah, we still hate that Green Witch.
By the way, that's something I wanted to note, but I didn't have time to note. The death scene is maybe the most toothless death scene I've ever seen in my entire life. Because like they have like that sort of big moment, right, where they reaffirm their friendship in the closet, whatever, and like, oh, it's cool, like that's the whole big thing, like they're kind of like twin hearts, they love each other, they're no matter what, they'll always be together. And then, like, it's just like, oh, yeah, she's dead. And everyone just moves on 2 seconds later. And like, oh, so she's clearly not dead. And for me, I didn't know any of the twists and turns going into this. But like the fact that they like they're like, oh, yeah, I felt she's dead. The Wicked Witch is gone, whatever. We're all moving on. It's like, oh, she's not dead. We're going to see her in 5 seconds. So that to me also kind of pissed me off, the fact that they did not give that any sort of weight.
I was happy they at least, and I was not worried about this because we knew going in, they could have gone two different directions. They could have, well, I guess not. They could have gone a third that we didn't see, but I'm glad they didn't use the time expansion of the movie to dive deeper into the Wizard of Oz stuff. That would have, now that would have been, that could have been like all time. Again, that's like Cats level disaster. Had they like really like, expanded it and like done a full-on Dorothy and like that could have been just nightmare stuff. So I'm at least glad they didn't do that, even like not fully showing her douse her with water, because that is like, maybe this sounds corny, but that's like sacrilegious to me, of like such an iconic thing. So I'm glad they left it alone as much as they could for the most part.
But that kind of hamstrung Chu though, because now he can't show like what's happening in the movie, and rightfully so, Jeff. I agree. Like they shouldn't have shown that, like, because it is Wizard of Oz was a movie that's always on in my house. My mom's favorite movie. So like it's just it's also same relationship I think that you have with it. But like Chu now is at a disadvantage because he can't show things that are happening in this world.
And they just don't make sense together. Like it's right. It's oil and vinegar. You know what I mean? You know what's weird too is like it could be a really interesting way of like kind of showing the different viewpoints and perspectives and stuff. And I think that's obviously what the whole point of this is, of the experience of Wicked, is getting the different experience of someone you kind of view as black and white. But like they really don't coexist at all. Like you can't, there's no way you can, like, there's no like reclamation between those two projects at all. So that's very tough for me kind of like going back on. By the way, I want to give it one big positive. The Girl in the Bubble song where they do the mirror sequence, I thought that was very cool.
Yep.
So I say, in a movie with a lot of really bad shots, I thought that sequence was very cool.
She definitely got the better end of the longer end of the stick. Is that even a fucking phrase? Because her song was way better.
Yeah, significantly.
That which will contend, Cynthia Erivo's might not even get a nomination for that song, but that will contend, but it doesn't really matter. None of them have any chance at K-pop Demon Hunters.
No,
The only thing would be is if like the K-pop songs all split, you might get three nominations from K-pop Demon.
Is that one big one? Song.
Golden is going to be the
Golden
winner.
Should, but it is one of the, again, you don't, what was the song? It's like, I don't know. Does one of them have like an I'm Ken kind of fucking, still got a couple months left. So it's like, does one of them like kind of rise up the charts in a different way? So I don't know. But that K-pop Demon Hunter should have that on lock. So yeah, I mean, it's, the nominations, it'll still get a lot, some of the technical nominations. She's still going to get nominated for supporting actress Ariana Grande. She is still the odds on favorite, though her odds have gone down in a just weaker year. Though I do have a complaint about, I get it. And I thought about this the other day and I think it's just, I get it. I wish Chase Infinity could be supporting actress for one battle after another. But I also get why she's not. I get why she'd be in the lead actress role. For Oscar nominations, but I do wish she was in supporting, because I think she'd be at least my pick for supporting. But again, she's in the support in the lead actress category, which already seems like it's over, with Jesse Buckley, for Hamnet. That's it on Wicked. So yeah, it's a very interesting discussion. I think it's fascinating. Also, get ready for more musical adaptations that for the most part flop at the box office, because this has a superstar in Ariana Grande. It had a great first movie with some of the most iconic songs ever sung on Broadway, and it also has the fucking Wizard of Oz in it, so it's like recognizable IP. Wait till wait till an adaptation of something like nobody cares, they're like, this is, hey, the Music Man with Hugh Jackman,
the
right,
Sunset,
like,
Boulevard.
Yeah, it's like so that's Wicked for good. All right, this episode of Project Big Screen is brought to you in part by Game Time, the best place to buy tickets for anything sports, comedy, Broadway, music, and more. So many amazing concerts coming up this winter. A big one with the holiday season rolling around is Trans-Siberian Orchestra. I know that. I just pulled it up here on the old Game Time app. Any locations you got, New Hampshire, California, Massachusetts, looking at Anaheim, California, Worcester, Phoenix, Arizona, Uncasville, Connecticut. You can go all over the place to find the Trans-Siberian Orchestra and get fantastic deals. Not just fantastic deals, the best deals around. Also, fees always included. Like, for example, if you are in Massachusetts, you want to go see them, Worcester, $70, fantastic. Last-minute tickets, you can get them a couple weeks ahead of time. And I said earlier, all fees included, that's maybe the best part. Because all these other websites you go to, you get the tickets, you get them ready to go, you go to checkout, all of a sudden it's like ballooning by $50, $60, $70. But no, Game Time tells you right then and there. The Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets as well. You don't got to worry about any of that. Take the guesswork out of buying concert tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app. Create an account and use code PROJECT, P-R-O-J-E-C-T, for $20 off your first purchase. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Download the Game Time app today. A turn on a much different movie, Sentimental Value, from Joachim Trier. Sisters Nora and Agnes reunite with their estranged father, Gustav, a once-renowned director who offers Nora a role in what he hopes will be his big comeback film. This movie has a lot more, like, filmmaking. This is one of the more interesting, like, sneaky, like, movies about making a film that I've ever seen. Like, I didn't realize that's how, like, how much of a large part that would have in this movie. It's almost a character. Nora turns it down, but soon discovers he's given the part to an eager young Hollywood star. The two siblings must now navigate a complicated relationship with Gustav while dealing with an American actress dropped right into the middle of their complex family dynamics. His last movie was The Worst Person in the World a couple years back. One of the best movies I'm ever made. Like, it's I think it's that good. It's in my top 200, maybe 100, I believe.
It's in my top 100.
Yeah, it's one of the best movies ever made. He also made Oslo, August 31st, about under 10 years ago. Also fantastic. 133 minutes long. It's not in a ton of theaters, but it opened wider. So absolutely check this out if you can, because this is one of our best working directors in Hollywood right now, or just in general. I guess Hollywood might not be the right word, but just in movie making. Renata Reinsve is the lead actress. She has been in a bunch of random things. I just mentioned she was in Worst Person in the World, probably her best role, but she was also in Presumed Innocent with Jake Gyllenhaal a couple years ago. Which, what was that? Was that on HBO? What was that on? Was that on Paramount?
I think it was HBO also.
Yeah, it was on one of those. She was the character that is one of the kind of, I don't want to spoil it, but she's in the movie. She was also in last year, which I kind of forget here and there. She was in A Different Man last year. She's kind of popping up in a lot of stuff. Whenever she's in, it's typically pretty good. Stellan Skarsgård plays her father in the movie. Inga It's daughter, Lilius, which I said that for the most part correct, so very proud of myself there. She plays the other sister. And then Elf, the most random thing in this European movie with very little English, is Elle Fanning is in the movie. She plays the Hollywood star who fills the role. Just under $1 million at the box office so far. Again, not in a ton of places quite yet. Obviously nowhere near as big as like Wicked in terms of like theaters. 87%, 87 on Metacritic, 8.0 on IMDb, 4.2 on Letterboxd, 96, 98 audience critic split. This for me is temporarily, I won't say why, number three on the year for me. To abide by embargo rules. This is number three on the year. 95 out of 100, the third movie of the year I've given a 95 above. It's awesome. What a fucking fantastic movie. One of the best family dynamics movies you'll ever see. One of the best movies about like filmmaking you'll ever see. Fascinating combination of like family dynamics and like what art can say and how it can have an impact on relationships, trauma. It's just fantastic the way it's made. He is probably top three director working right now for me. Like, he is so fucking good. And I don't know if I need him to be releasing a movie every year, like Yorgos, but like, let's make sure let's close the gap a little bit, you know, like I don't want to wait too many more years for another one from him. And Reins was, I mean, I actually think she's the best working actress. Like, I think she is that good. She is dynamite everything she's in. Stellan Skarsgård's unbelievable. He is the current favorite along with Sean Penn to win Best Supporting Actor. The sister, Lilius, she was fantastic. Elle Fanning, obviously always good in what she's in. This was great. This was like, it cuts deep. You connect with the characters immediately. Looks incredible. awesome movie. I had high expectations and they were met with flying colors. With 95 for me. Clemmer.
Yeah, it's a 92 for me. This is an absolutely fantastic movie. It's so rich. The characters. You have these movies that are about Hollywood. And I fell into this with Jay Kelly, where like everyone's like this trope. And it's like, all right, it's just annoying. And people are cliched. There's no cliches here. These are rich people that you can believe exist in the world. It also like tells the story of a house. Like you talk about this really makes Robert Zemeckis' Here look even dumber by comparison, because the house is very much a character in this movie and it's beautifully done. It's like you do talk about trauma and it's stuff that's like very relatable in that, like just the relationship we have with our parents and as our parents get older and we get older and kind of where we fit into this world, or great relationship with siblings. Like a lot of times you see in movies, like siblings are just fighting and as opposed to like just taking care of each other and concerned about each other. And I felt like a more realistic portrayal of adult siblings. It's Elle Fanning too. Incredible. As she's this American trying to fit in this kind of foreign world and foreign movie being made. And where does she exactly kind of jive in there? And she does a phenomenal job. And Stellan Skarsgård is just unbelievable. I talked on the show before and you guys made fun of me, rightfully so, I guess, but this is my opinion. I didn't love Sean Penn in One Battle After Another, but man, did I love Skarsgård here. Just an amazing, amazing job. I love this movie. It's given me, I saw it a couple weeks ago now. I still think about it quite a bit. It's so rich. It's like a great novel, but a movie. Like that's how rich and deep the characters are and the setting and everything around you. A lot to think about, a lot to chew about, and just awesome. He's the best. Van Trier, like you said, Jeff, everything you said, I echo. Renssev is maybe the best actress in movies right now, and Von Trier is right there among the best directors. This was a pleasure to watch.
Wait. There is no Von in his name, right?
Am I wrong? I'm sorry. No Von. I'm sorry.
You're confusing with another.
Another Von. I'm terrible at Swedish names. Jeff, okay. I feel bad. I don't even want to butcher the actress who plays the sister. You did a great job saying her name. She's very good too. I had never seen her before.
Inge Ipsdotter. It's actually not. It looks like a crazy name, but Ipsdotter is not that crazy. Like that doesn't seem real. By the way, that seems like she just threw that in there. That's Inga Lilius, and she's like, let's just toss Ipsdotter in there.
Ipsdotter. Well, she does a beautiful job.
Yeah, she does.
You really care about that character. Yeah, incredible.
Ken Jack.
I saw this in Montclair at the Claridge Theater, which, by the way, first time, I guess they did a Montclair Film Festival there. Awesome theater if you live in New Jersey. Highly recommend. I think there's a few things that anchor how like what makes this movie so great. The first being that's beautiful. It's like a real movie. And coming off of Wicked, it's like so stark how different that is. And they make a point, like Clemmer said, to show you how like the house is a character. And I think you really feel that throughout it because you're stuck in this house for most of the movie. And I think you never feel claustrophobic at any point, which is nice. And secondly, I think the cast is unreal. Like you said, Skarsgård's amazing. The sister is awesome. And then I think Renata Rensva is like the most talented face in all of Hollywood. She's like obviously beautiful, but also I think like one of the best real human being faces, like no Instagram face or any of that stuff. Like in the words she's able to get out without saying anything is amazing. Like she gets a full scene across just with like a certain look. And I think it's incredible. I don't know many other actors that are able to do that. And then thirdly, I think the story, I think this is just like, you know, it's an onion, really takes a time, like peeling back every individual layer. You get a kind of like, I think you mentioned it, Jeff, like art as like a healing force for like unifies them, which is beautiful. And you also see that in Hamnet too, which I think me and Gooch have seen. And also I feel like probably part of that is in Jay Kelly. I was going to ask you how that compared, but I think we could get to that later, Clemmer. But yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was really impressive too for Skarsgård to give that good performance. Because like people forget, he had a stroke pretty recently. Like he can't do lines. Like he needs to get them through an earpiece, which I don't think is, number one, I don't think that's as easy as people think. Like to repeat a line as you're hearing it back out. And also like he's Swedish. This is in a different language. Like it's fucking crazy the amount of like layers of how impressive that performance is to me. There were a lot of cool stuff in this. Elle Fanning, like you mentioned too, those genes should be in the Hollywood fucking Hall of Fame tomorrow. Good Lord. Jesus. But yeah, that I love this movie a lot. Awesome. I would say probably along with you, Jeff, it's in my top three. Probably number three right now, if not maybe two. But yeah, now Trier's like, he can make him no wrong right now. I think he's one of the best working directors, and I'd love to see watch everything and anything he ever does.
I don't like how the word hey and hi translates to Norwegian. I don't like that it's just hey and hi. It's very, yeah. For some reason, every time they said hey or hi, and it's just hey and hi in English on subtitles, it's the most distracting. This is not a critique. It's the most distracting thing I've ever seen in subtitles. I don't know why. I can watch a movie and have the subtitles in my periphery and follow along perfectly. No issue. I watch so many for some reason, the Norwegian, the translation of hey and hi just being hey and hi just threw me off. It took me like 10 minutes to begin the movie. I'm like, wait, like, what is happening? Am I hearing this movie wrong right now? Yeah. That's my only note on that. Gooch.
Yeah. Movies about trauma and the value of art. That's a tough thing to do and tough thing to pull off. I think, especially in 2025, when for the past 15 years, it seems like that's all anybody wants to do in like drama, horror, comedy, no matter what genre you're doing. We get these movies a lot and they can be insufferable in the wrong hands. And this is being made by a Norwegian film director from Northern Europe. This shouldn't work with an American audience this crew of people, to be honest. Like, this just shouldn't work. And it does. It's just such a great script, besides the performances, which are, I think, like, award-worthy across the board. I think Stellan, like, any of these actors or actresses winning in any of their categories would be justified. I would not have a problem with it. Especially, I think, Inga, Ibs' daughter, like, holds the camera and delivers some really, like, transcendent stuff in this movie. But besides those performances, this screenplay is just so smart. Kinjak, you called it an onion. It peels itself back so nicely. The house being a character, like you said, Klimmer, works so wonderfully. That ending, I want to talk about that here in a second, the way the house transforms at the end, has left me thinking for like 2 weeks. I went back and saw it again because I loved it so much. 90 out of 100 for me. I want to talk about this more because, yeah, it hits so many different themes and like it works. And usually when a movie tries to do this, like it just does not work. It comes off so insufferable and so artsy and condescending, and this just doesn't have those pieces inside of it. It's so tender and like endearing. I loved it.
Yeah, so we all have it really high, one of the best of the year. So spoiler alert, the Ryan's a character turns down working with her father. They had a strained, poor relationship. Both daughters do. Even the daughters together as sisters had a strained relationship. They begin to kind of pull more together. She turns it down, but still kind of becomes closer to him throughout the process of the movie being made. He signs on the Elle Fanning character to be in the movie, and she kind of has issues connecting to the role because it's written for his daughter. It's not written for her. Like, she dyes her hair. She's trying to decide. She's like, why am I doing English? Why am I speaking English? Like, should I just be speaking, you know, Norwegian? Should it be more similar to what you and your daughter speak? And so she's like trying accents and all these things. And eventually it falls apart, and the daughter still says no, but then eventually reads the script with her sister in this house, which the house is amazing. The house is a humongous part of the movie. The house is essentially a character, which I've heard a bunch of people say. That's not like an original thought. It is a character in the movie. They do a great job kind of throughout the movie explaining like the trauma of his life and him moving his mother to suicide, even though he denies a little bit, like it's about her, but it is about her, the movie he's making. And it means a lot for his daughter to play that. And then eventually in the end, she reads the script, she cries. And the reveal of her taking on the role is this scene shot on a stage in a house, which you can tell if there's like the blue screen happening behind it. Unless you do think she's about to really kill herself, which is a pretty shocking moment, I'd imagine, if that's what you think is going to happen. But they have her acting out the scene of her saying goodbye to her son, which is obviously him, and then going in, closing the door and killing herself, which is something that's kind of been implied and shown throughout the movie in like flashbacks. It's a very powerful scene. And then the yells cut and they have a really tender, wordless, no spoken word moment. Like it just kind of plays out with music in the end. And you have this moment where they clearly like have finally found this common ground and this connection through this movie and like her big break and a role. So amazing ending, great beginning. She has a freak out on a stage play in the beginning, which is fucking intense. Very good. After a really good kind of like narrative explanation of like kind of like the house and their lives and like the people involved, that kind of kicks things off the beginning. One of the better beginnings and ends of anything I've seen. Like, just he, there is, you could tell me there's other better directors in Hollywood, and I'd be like, yep, that's fair. Like, I think Denis Villeneuve right now is like top notch, pretty tough to beat, at just as an example. But I don't think there's anybody better at portraying human emotion and vulnerability on screen like Trier. He is the best. Like, he understands humans better than any human alive. Like, it's it is unbelievable. Like, it's one of those things where you don't even, like, I mean, you could believe me, but like, you don't know it until you see it play out in this Worst Person in the World, which I got behind me on the shelf. Like, he is unbelievable.
One thing I want to bring up too, like, just how rich this is. I don't know if you know, like, the brother-in-law, so like, the sister's husband, even his relationship with Stellan Skarsgård, he's very annoyed by him. He's defensive of his wife with him. It's such a small, almost like wordless role, but even that character has levels and layers and reasons to feel the way he does. So when you have these characters that may have three lines in the whole movie, have such a rich connection to what's happening around us. Every single person has a purpose. Every single thing has a reason. And everyone's relationship feels real. That guy should kind of hate Stellan Skarsgård and probably would in real life. So because of that, like, kind of like you were saying, Jeff, how like the connection just to humanity and how like it feels, and that makes it feel so real. That is so powerful. This is a really, really fantastic movie.
The brother-in-law character of Reinsve is like one of my favorite characters in the movie, any movie this year. Like, he doesn't have almost any lines. He's like this loser who won't get off his phone. He's always screen like saying the wrong fit. It is. There's a couple really quietly hilarious scenes.
I mean,
especially with like there's the birthday scene for the grandson, Reinsve's character's nephew, where Skarsgård character gives him like a bunch of DVDs.
Yeah. Criterion. Criterion.
Unbelievably inappropriate movies like Piano Teacher to be giving this kid.
Monica Bellucci.
You're gonna love these. But even like they talk about his screen time, but they're ragging on like the brother-in-law being like, yeah, is his screen time almost double? He's just pathetic. He's just a loser. that is a great character. Yeah, that got me. That's pretty good.
Yeah, good ass movie.
I just wonder though, with these two, and this is kind of my big question for this movie, is like, what will it take for these two to win?
A really weak movie year, like Norwegian, like what foreign films don't typically win a lot of awards. Like, it's just hard.
He's done an English movie. He did it a long while ago. It's called Louder Than Bombs. Anyone seen it?
No.
Came out after Oslo. It has Jesse Eisenberg in it.
Oh wow!
So he's done. But my weird thing is, like, I don't know if I want him to do that. Like, I just keep doing this. But her, I would assume her big American role, like big American role, is probably pretty close to have. Like, I'd assume you're going to see it sooner than later. She's not out of it in terms of the Oscars. She has a pretty tall hill to climb. Jesse Buckley is the odds-on favorite. Also, Hamnet, like, it's just like just the concept of what it is. Like, their voters are going to eat that up. But I would not rule her out yet. She still has a chance. Like, if she cleans up some of the more international awards, like, she could see a boost to win an Oscar. But I don't think her time is there yet. But I do wonder, it's like when is it going to happen? Because when it happens, her first big, like, good American movie where she's like the lead, like, I think she's just gonna win. Like, I just think it's just a matter of when that happens.
I was just looking at her upcoming work, and one of the next things she has is something called The Governess, which is her and Lily Rose Depp, who's maybe the fakest face in all of Hollywood. It's gonna be one of the like the craziest clashes of human being faces I think ever put on screen, with Joe Talbot, I guess, directing.
I don't know if she'll ever breakthrough in that kind of way. Like, these nominations I think will continue to come, but just coming from Norwegian cinema is just very tough. It's even tougher than like coming from, you know, Korea or Japan. Like, those are at this point established within, you know, the foreign film landscape. Like, Norwegian film, like Eastern and Northern European movie making, is just, it doesn't have the same footprint and history with American audiences that, you know, other foreign, like Italy, like those countries have with us.
Like, but the next comp, like Another Round, and like Mads was incredible in that, and they didn't really give him the
Another Round, Kieślowski comes to mind, like those movies, like very respected and do well at Cannes and do well at Venice, but I don't know if it's ever going to break. And I don't know if that's like a goal. I don't, it doesn't seem like, and I mean, just coming from the way his movies play out and the way these characters are, like, I don't know if that's something he's particularly interested in.
I thought he was literally rejecting that with this movie, with the Elle Fanning character.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, I thought he was like on screen, literally like, yeah, no, it's not going to work that way. Like, I'm doing it this way.
Also, that Netflix, the Netflix moment, very, very funny.
Yeah. Very funny Netflix. Shout out to them for agreeing to that, by the way. They like take the piss on that a little bit, like to be in that. Yeah, that was that got me. That was pretty good.
His like look up when they're like, we actually are still working out the details. And his like look of like, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into?
That was also kind of heartbreaking too. The scene where he's talking to the DP that like can't move anymore. That was a heartbreaking.
There's stuff about aging in here that's very powerful.
And I think that adds to the ending, because I think part of the reason why they end up on that soundstage, you'll see that DP is there with him. And I think he, you know, what is, does the house have value, or does making this piece of art have value? Like, is it the house itself or making this movie? I think they gave the house up to be able to make it on their own terms. And part of those terms was making it with his daughter, making it with his his longtime trusted DP. So it just like, yeah, this screenplay just works on. I mean, it's really fucking brilliant.
That grandkid too. Well, that's the blondest child I think that's ever existed in humankind. Good Lord. He's a good actor too.
We will put a close on reviews. Wicked for Good. Sentimental Value. Definitely check out Sentimental Value if you can. It's starting to go wider. It is absolutely worth every penny, every minute you spend getting to the theater. So go check it out. Next week, abbreviated grouping here. Kendrick away on a honeymoon, Clemmer away on a shoot. So Gooch, it might be you and me, but we may have to find a backup here. Knives Out, the third Knives Out, Wake Up Dead Man. That is getting a wide release. We might wait for that with Netflix, but it is a way different release than the other Netflix movies. Like, I clearly Ryan Johnson was like, no, we're doing this as like a fucking movie this time. Zootopia 2 also coming out. So some things coming out in the next week.
Well, Ryan Johnson was complaining yesterday about it, or a couple of days ago about it, with AMC is not taking.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I did not see that.
Yeah. AMC's like, yeah, we're good. And he was like, kind of like,
oh, that's bullshit. That.
It's like,
that
well, you did agree to go to Netflix, man. Like,
yeah. Easier to find, though, than I will say Frankenstein, that's for sure. Like, it is definitely easier if you can,
It's going to be in Cinemark, Alamo Drafthouse, a couple other.
Yep. Folks, did you know the three T's of Thanksgiving? You got turkey, obviously, probably the best part. But after that, you have the table for a gathering with family. Maybe not the best part. But then, the most fun part, touchdowns. That's right. With DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Every touchdown could bring you closer to cashing in before dessert with DraftKings Sportsbook. All the actions in your hands. First touchdown, anytime touchdown, live bets, and more. Every play, every snap, every game counts. Big plays, bold calls, and bragging rights. When the games get good, the bets get better. Here's the best part. New customers bet just $5, only $5. And if your bet wins, you'll get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Use those bets on it's Shador season. Shador Sanders. Anytime touchdown, either a guy catching it from him, maybe he's going to run one in. We'll see. The Shador era. But whether it's Sanders or anybody, you can bet on them on DraftKings. When touchdowns happen, we feast down the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code DEBATE. That's code DEBATE, DEBATE. Bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets if your bet wins. In partnership with DraftKings, the crown is yours. News time.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, pass-through of per wager tax may apply in Illinois. 21 and over. Age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Restrictions apply. Bet must win to receive bonus bets which expire in 7 days. Minimum odds required. For additional terms and responsible gaming resources, see dkng.co/audio. Limited time offer.
Some trailers to round up. A huge trailer. Big one for Lionsgate. 109 million views. Hunger Games Sunrise on the Reaping, the sixth Hunger Games movie. The second spinoff. This one follows Haymitch, Woody Harrelson's character, when he wins the Hunger Game. Spoiler alert, he wins, by the way. He's not dead. He doesn't die. He wins the Hunger Games. Played by Joseph Zada, who I mostly know him from a really bad Amazon show that came out this past summer called We Were Liars. The most morbid, depressing, shocking things I've ever watched in my life. Like, jaw-droppingly depressing show. Unbelievable. It's not even spoiling it. Like, you could guess 100 ways how that show ends. You'll never guess it. He plays Haymitch, the Woody Harrelson character. Ralph Fiennes plays President Snow, the third person to play President Snow. Donald Sutherland obviously played him in the original movies. Elle Fanning plays Effie, who was played by Elizabeth Banks. Jesse Plemons plays Plutarch, who was played by Philip Seymour Hoffman in Catching Fire, and then the movies after that, though those movies were being filmed and produced when he passed away. So he's not as much in the final Mockingjay. Kieran Culkin as Caesar Flickerman, the Stanley Tucci character. Kelvin Harrison Jr. as Beatty, who was played by Jeffrey Wright, one of Ken Jack's favorites. Goated oh, yeah. voice. God,
his names are just incredible. The character names
Maya
are
Hawk. Maya Hawk as Beatty and Wyrus of the Wyrus and Beatty duo from Catching Fire. Lily Taylor plays Mags, who's the older woman in Catching Fire, if you remember that. And then Glenn Close and McKenna Grace have new roles. McKenna Grace is in everything right now. They have new roles. Glenn Close is basically the Effie character, the one who comes in and does like the reaping. And then McKenna Grace is one of the tributes alongside Haymitch in The Hunger Games. The Hunger Games, which has a lot of the May Queen Midsummer vibes to it. I'll tell you what, it looks really cool. Like the look of this trailer was fantastic. I give him a lot of credit. I was excited for this because of the cast, but like the trailer kind of did it for me. Like I'm like looking forward to this.
The last movie was good too, which I think kind of like brings up the vibe a little bit. Like the... I was so not like out, but I was kind of like, where are we at? We're just kind of cash in with the, what was the last one called again?
Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes.
That was probably part of being out of it. It was the fucking naming. But yeah, like the last one, I had no expectations of it being any good, and it was awesome. It was pretty fucking solid. Probably the best one I'd seen since the first one. So enjoyed that. So this definitely a little bit of my expectations shifted up a little bit. I also saw people mad that they didn't reuse Tom Blythe as President Snow, which is maybe the funniest thing. They're like, oh, we have to use Ralph Fiennes. My lobster's too buttery ass fucking tweet. Like, we wanted Tom Blythe to come back and do President Snow instead of having Ralph Fiennes. Are you out of your mind?
Well, like 30 years later, like 40
years.
Yeah,
it makes
later,
no goddamn like... sense. Like, oh, we could put him in prosthetics. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? But yeah, I mean, great casting, I think, for a lot of the newer people. Obviously, Jesse Plemons, home run. I also saw people saying they want Cooper. Like, no, this is Jesse Plemons is perfect fit for this, for picking up that.
That gets to be, like, I think that'd be
he's too young.
It's very uncomfortable, the conversation around Plemons and
Kiefer.
Plemons very clearly looks like Philip Seymour Hoffman, has a lot of his same talents in the same departments, and like has played Philip Seymour Hoffman's son before. I mean, like, it just makes sense, but it's tough that Philip Seymour Hoffman does have a literal working son who's a very talented actor.
He's good. He's just young. And this is like an older role, needs a little more experience too. And the same thing you could say with Kiefer, honestly, like maybe he doesn't want to step in and do his fucking dad's role. Maybe that's a little weird of a thing to do for an actor. But yeah, so I love all his cast, and I don't know, a little more excited than I think I would have been if you asked me pre the last movie.
By the way, Presumed Innocent was Apple TV Plus for those who are still screaming from when we first said it. But it feels like an HBO show.
Yeah. Isn't Plemons like the same age as Philip Seymour Hoffman was when he did the first?
I would imagine close. Like,
no way.
40 something, I would imagine.
Really?
It's got to be close.
When he did the first Hunger Games?
37, never mind. No, so Philip Seymour Hoffman had to be older than 37, right?
44.
PSH was 46 when he passed away.
Okay, so with 9 years apart, and supposed to be 30 years in the past or whatever?
No disrespect to the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman, one of the greatest actors of all time, but did carry his age quite a bit. Like, he looked a bit older he always looked a bit older.
Yeah, I don't know. I saw the first Hunger Games.
He was 44, by the way.
I saw the first Hunger Games. I didn't, I thought it was fine. I didn't see the other ones.
Wait. You saw the first but not Catching Fire?
Yeah, I saw the first
one. Oh, that's you got to watch Catching Fire.
No, I mean the first one that came out.
Catching Fire is excellent. I don't love the first Hunger Games. It's shaky cam, like nausea inducing. You got to watch Catching Fire. You don't have to watch the ones after that, but Catching Fire is excellent. I think Catching Fire is legitimately a very good movie. Different director, too.
I think you'll watch this franchise and be like pleasantly surprised because it's YA, big blockbuster. Everything about it, like most of these franchises, just they don't really try. Like they got a big book IP. They know people are going to show up. Look at the Colleen Hoover universe right now.
Seriously.
But these movies, man, they are like pretty across the board. I know, Jeff, you said like the shaky cam in the first one. It's still like really well-made movie, I think. And like the costuming, like the ensemble cast in each one of these movies shows up and they cast really well. Mm. Always have. And this cast, more of the same. Great casting. Looks great. I like the last one. For the most part, the last 30 minutes is a little absurd running through the woods for like 20 minutes. But still had a good time with the last one. I'm kind of pumped for this one. Like this franchise is kind of turning into, I mean, it's always been consistent, but like this is, you know, showing up 10 years later and kind of not missing a beat and still willing to put in the work. I'm all in.
Yeah. It's Clemmer. I would toss on Catching Fire this next week. Like, okay. I think you will like it. It's an enjoyable, great cast. And it just, they like found their groove from the first one. Also has one of the, I've seen people talk about this in the last week with the trailer. Catching Fire has one of the coolest aspect ratio moves you'll ever see in a movie. Like really awesome, like immersively awesome. So that's Hunger Games, Sunrise on the Reaping. Project Hail Mary had a trailer from Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who have not done many movies, but they obviously have had their hand in some big things. They are the producers behind the Spider-Verse movies, not the directors. They did Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs and both 21 and 22 Jump Street, which I think are two of the best comedy movies ever made. They're not the directors of Solo, A Star Wars Story, but they were for a while. This is a sci-fi movie, a adaptation of a book from the same guy who wrote The Martian, which you can kind of tell based on the vibe. Ryan Gosling and Sandra Hüller, who was in two Best Picture nominated movies a couple years back, with I keep wanting to say
Zone of Interest,
Anatomy of Fall,
and then
Zone of Interest.
Yes, she's in this movie along with some other people as well. Early rumblings, this is really good, by the way.
Don't watch the trailer.
Not watching
because that it gives away so much stuff. Like I,
it does. It gives away way too much.
What are we doing here?
I didn't watch.
I'm in. Like 10 seconds in, I'm in. Like that's all I need. Like I would recommend if people haven't seen the trailer, don't watch it because
I'm very excited for this.
They're like on paper, everything is working. Like the book feels like it was written. Like the character legitimately, I think, was written for Ryan Gosling to the point where like the character's name is like Rylan Grace. Like it's kind of like, I wonder, and it has heavy, it's like basically The Martian, but meets Interstellar. So you get like a little bit of an Odyssey in space situation. That's, you got me sold. Lord and Miller doing this, Greg Frazier, which you also shooting this, like there's a lot of good on the table here.
This is part of the, along with The Martian, the Why Is That Guy in Space cinematic universe, which is what is it? That's basically what it feels like. It's like kind of like nerdy smart guy. It's like, well, that guy's in space. What a wacky concept. I love The Martian. I'm a huge Martian fan. That's like a unique take. Like many people love The Martian. Martian, which did sneaky so much money at the box office. For an original, based on a book. But I'm excited for this. And there are rumblings this is very good. So
these guys also did Last Man on Earth with Will Forte, which I thought was actually a pretty brilliant
show. Oh yeah, that was a great show for us.
And
yeah,
that does deal with a guy being in space by himself. There's a subplot with oh my god, what's the actor's name? SNL, Jason Sudeikis. There's a subplot of him being in space by himself, and it's really well done. And these guys do such a great job mixing drama and comedy. I'm all in for this. This is, I'm very excited
for
this movie.
Another trailer for The Moment, a mockumentary revolving around Charlie XCX's first headlining tour. I don't know what this is. Cryptic, weird trailer. I can't tell if this is like a tour movie or if it is a movie. I don't fully get it from A24.
I think it's supposed to be like self-parodizing almost. I think it's very fictionalized, like a fictionalized tour movie, which I think is very, that's interesting. And she's got great
taste. No, I'm definitely intrigued by it in that sense. If that's what it is, I'm very intrigued by it.
She is like sneaky, like one of our biggest cinephiles. Like if you follow her on Letterboxd.
She's also big embargo breaker, by the way. If you've been embargoed to not review a movie, Charlie XCX has already put a review out just ahead, which I assume they're okay with. Yeah. She has the only, I believe, Marty Supreme review on Letterboxd. Because we're not technically allowed to talk about that movie. Well, in length, more than just a couple quick notes. So December 1st. Yeah, she's a huge, huge movie person.
I'm so tired of Rachel Sennett and Charlie XCX and this whole thing, like the Isle of LA thing. I tried an episode of it. I'm done with it. I need a break. And then did you see also the clip that went viral of that was a Subway thing or whatever? She's like, everyone should be addicted to something. Like, it's like, we need a break from Rachel Sennett, I think, for a little while. Like a little bit of a break. Charlie XCX, sure, go out, keep making music. Fucking great artist and all that. But I think I need a break from Rachel Sennett for a little while.
Yeah, I haven't loved I Love LA.
It's not for us.
Yeah, it's not for us. I haven't loved it. I do like her, though. Like, I do think she's very talented.
I do, too. I will admit I have some trauma from Hurry Up Tomorrow. And I got some flashbacks from watching this trailer from that movie, which was just abysmal. And bizarre. I'm hoping this is more coherent than that.
We'll see what this proves to be. I'm still not fully sure. Though they just say mockumentary.
The trailer. I'm gonna say it right now. The trailer looked terrible. I mean, just terrible. But I don't know what that
A24 shit you could ever imagine.
Clemmer, are you not Brat?
We get the Brat thing. I get like the fact that like I'm as old as I am already like sick of it. I can only imagine how young people must be sick of it. Like we get it. You did the Brat thing. That's good. What's next?
Hoppers from Pixar. This is where there's technology where people can go into the mind of animals. I like if this was good. I don't know if it will be. It looks more fun than like thought-provoking, but Pixar back in the day, like before they really leaned into being thought-provoking, like trailers didn't always come off as like, oh, this movie's gonna really make you think and make you cry. So it looked kind of fun, just a kind of harmless Pixar movie. Piper Curta, Bobby Moynihan, John Hamm, Meryl Streep, Dave Franco, and then Moana live action trailer. Oh boy. Whoa, this was a tough one. Moana, which is a modern classic, and has songs that are going to go down as some of the biggest Disney songs ever. The Rock is back, which you don't really see him. You only see his back. You don't see his face, which is weird to me because what's the reveal? I don't know. Like, why not just put him in the trailer? This looked oof. Not a great first trailer for this. It's gonna make $1 zillion though.
It's gonna make $1 billion and like it won't matter in the end, but like it's one of those trailers you watch and 99% of it is animated and you're like, what's the purpose other than money? And I made a video and I tweeted as much too, and people are like, what do you mean? Like it's kids movie. Like, I don't think that's an excuse to not try. You know what I mean? Like, I think you could try to make something beautiful and interesting.
Yeah, the original movie is a kids movie that everyone loves. So it's like, why not do that?
Just put some effort into it. But like, this is all like shot in that horrible backlit Atlanta fucking backlot. And it looks gross. It looks so gross. And I looked it up. Like they did the production, like from what I could tell, like 80% of it, maybe more, is in Atlanta. And they just did like the ending couple weeks in Hawaii. Like Disney shot Lost in Hawaii for 50 years. Like, how do you do that all in location when you can't do all of Moana on location in Hawaii? That makes no fucking sense to me.
Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah, just do Lilo and Stitch.
Last year, made $1 billion.
Like, same thing. Like, go fucking put an effort into this. Don't make more of this just like gray sludge. Like, I really, watching that trailer pissed me off so much, and it shouldn't, because it's a kids movie, it's whatever, we shouldn't care, but again, it's really not an excuse to not try. And that's what I feel like when I watch that. I'm like, this is so, like, we know it's a money grab, but you could put effort into it. You could really put more effort into it than that.
This is why K-pop Demon Hunters is a massive hit.
Yeah,
because they are completely neglecting an entire generation by just regurgitating nostalgia for Gen Xers and millennials, that they don't create anything original for kids now. And then, so kids now are like, well, what's for me? And like, this isn't for them. This is for millennials. This isn't even for Gen Xers. This is for millennials. It's Moana stuff.
It's 10 years old.
I don't even know if it's for millennials. It's like Gen Z. Like, this movie came out
10 years ago.
10 years ago.
The a lot of the kids who liked this movie are still kids. It's crazy.
There's no nostalgia yet. I don't even know if you can get there.
Yeah.
But like, what's the last? They need to make movies for like kids, like little kids now. Like,
you're right. You nailed the K-pop Demon Hunters. There is a reason why. I mean, there's a couple reasons. The music is obviously very good.
Right.
The sings, but well, like, it is. It also K-pop Demon Hunters does it. Kind of has that like manic like. I have no attention span energy to it, but done in like a long form way, right? Like the characters are kind of out there. That's like also just some of that like type of animation. Like you see that animation style from Sony with Spider-Verse, but you're right. Like it's a movie that was original, different, and intended for an audience that gobbled it up. But it's like for the most part, that audience gets slop usually. So, you know, why not give them some of that?
I also like don't get the idea of making this live action and then it's just, it's all animated. Like it's not even realistic CGI. It looks like animated CGI. Like very
horrible.
Bad.
Oh, to go back to Hoppers for a second. When I first saw that trailer, you know what I did see dollar signs. Well, like think about Elio. Like that movie was like, it wasn't terrible, but like that movie was just never gonna work. It was just like
I enjoyed Elio to an extent, yeah.
No, it was okay. It wasn't gonna make money, what I mean to say. Like it wasn't gonna be like but this movie, Animals, like, I think this is going to do really well. I think this is going to be a rebound for Pixar.
Yeah, I would like it to be good. Even honestly, it doesn't need to be a world ender. It doesn't need to make my, you know, I don't need to go, you know, change what I do day to day after I see it because it's that inspiring. Like, just make it a nice, fun, like, you know, some things can be like that.
Oh, I meant like a financial rebound. I can't imagine I'm going to like really think this movie's very good.
Yeah, but I think it could be. I still think Pixar has the sauce. Like, I just think they should kind of like find the right thing. So we'll see. First look at Legend of Zelda live action movie. This is from Wes Ball, who recently did the Last Planet of the Apes movie, which was very well liked and a really solid movie. Came to the Planet of the Apes. Before that did the Maze Runner franchise, and before that was Barry Jenkins' roommate at Florida State. I just like dropping that. I just like dropping that fact. It's always just a random fact.
He had did they live in the same dorm room as Burt Reynolds and Lee Corso?
Am I crazy? Did he drop from something to do this? I believe he's a huge Zelda fan, and I believe this is like he fought for this. I believe I could be making that up. I don't know about this one. I don't know. This one could be all. This just has that potential to be like, man, you made a Zelda movie, or I guess it could also be the Halo series too, Ken Jack, where it's like. Well, they just made a Halo series and it's like it was good for 5 minutes and then it wasn't.
It's the thing is, though, and I'll give him a little bit of credit here. I thought the same thing when he took over for Planet of the Apes, because like,
for sure,
you took over for Reeves and how do you just do that again with no Andy Serkis either? So I'm like, everything is pointing towards that movie being bad. And it was awesome. It was like no drop off whatsoever. So that's, I'll give him a little bit of grace there. But I would agree in that, like, Zelda is so. It's so weird. It's like so childlike and fantastical that like I don't know how you make that movie, because the people that are going to want to watch it are mostly going to be adults. And so I don't, it's a weird balance to try and strike. So I definitely would say, if you told me about this casting before Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, it'd be way different. But like now, I think after seeing success in that and with like a fully CGI animated world, which looked beautiful, by the way, and like a pretty not insane budget, like I'm down for this.
I've played a lot of Zelda games in my life. I don't.
I was gonna say, is anyone else a big Zelda fan? Like,
What is the story? Like, I don't know if I fully like understand how you put this into a movie.
Yeah, so I think the older ones had more story. The ones that
like
I
Ocarina of Time, or like
even before that, okay. The Super Nintendo version, and then the Nintendo version. You have this, trying to save a princess. So I guess similar to Mario there. Zelda
Link is saving Zelda. Yeah,
but like Ganondorf. But it's, I don't know. I think this could be a movie. Like I hope it's done well. I felt like playing it as a kid. I'm like, oh, this could be a movie. Like there's a whole world here.
The world is awesome.
I don't know. I think there's a lot of stuff here. The Hyrule, like all that stuff, is really interesting. I
can't wait to see the Master Sword.
Yeah.
Oh hell yeah.
Christian Bear. That sounds like a character in like a Pixar universe, like Cars. It's Christian Bear.
He's Christian Bear in Dark Knight, but in The Mechanist, he's Christian Twink.
Angel Studios character, I think.
Christian Bale nearing deal to star alongside Leo in Heat 2 for Michael Mann. Great.
Is that even real? Like, I feel like we get castings for this movie every 5 minutes, and then like a year later, they're like, "Oh, I don't know, actually."
No one's really adding this to like every time they talk about these castings. This is a prequel and a sequel
at the same time. Yeah.
At the same time, so that there are going to be a lot of different big name actors attached to this. I think that's why the budget is so like exorbitant on this. Is like the above the line stuff is going to cost so much. Bale and Leo, though, that's two actors that have never worked together, and right, that would be,
I don't think so,
that'd be incredible. I mean, that would be great. That'd be a dream come true for millennials. And then adding in like maybe Austin Butler and like a ton of this sounds awesome. I'm usually like against like late stage sequels, like, but this is a book that was written by Michael Mann years ago. Like, this sounds awesome. Give me Bale. I would love that.
I do think this is kind of like a Wicked Syndrome thing. From what I remember people saying, I think they said the prequel stuff is awesome and the sequel part sucks. Like, so like it's kind of needed a little bit of fixing there. And it kind of would depend. They might not even be in the same role. Like, they might not be in the same timeline. You know, one might be later, one might be
sooner. Right. Godfather 2 situation. Yeah.
Yeah. But it would be cool to see them work together, like you're saying.
This one from Letterboxd. Follow us on Letterboxd. By the way, Letterboxd handles are always on the screen if you're watching on YouTube. Coming in early December, Letterboxd Video Store, our latest feature to get you adding films to your watch list and crucially checking them off. Here's everything you need to know. At Letterboxd, your biggest mission is film discovery, but discovery is only half the battle. It's frustrating to add a movie to your watch list and realize you can't actually watch it. That's why we're trying something new and opening the doors to the Letterboxd Video Store, our own curated rental spot. Is a subscription service, no lock-in, no paywall. Just rent the films you want whenever you want and join the conversation in our community, logging, reviewing, and adding the list. That's a great feature. Assuming it has enough in there, but it does sound cool.
Where do people watch it? Like on their phone? I don't know.
I'd assume in Letterboxd.
I think they're launching an app too for like Roku. And
also, I believe Letterboxd has an Apple TV and like has like a TV client app as well. And then finally, Kevin Spacey is nearly homeless, he says. He's living in Airbnbs. He doesn't have anywhere to go. So initially when I read the article, it was like, oh, Kevin Spacey has no home. Like, oh, he can't find a studio. He can't. But no, he's like, says he's literally like homeless. He says that he's living in Airbnbs, going where the work is, has no home. And then he says this line, which is just one of the most unbelievable lines I've ever read. He said he's got some big names lining up for some things. He says, so my feeling is if Martin Scorsese or Quentin Tarantino call my manager tomorrow, it will be over. I will be incredibly honored and delighted when that level of talent picks up the phone, and I believe it's going to happen. Yeah, man. That's like a random college athlete being like, man, if I get picked number one, I am going to be in business, baby. That's like, hey, you know, if tomorrow I start making $2 million a year, I'm going to have a lot of money. Like, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. If Quentin Tarantino and Martin Scorsese call you, yeah, you're going to be in business, Kevin Spacey. That is for sure.
Tarantino, if he's still apologetic about Polanski, I go, what problems could you possibly have?
Tarantino's wrapped up in Fortnite right now.
Yeah, fuck it. Jesus Christ, dude.
His photo shoot he did another photo shoot where he just looks like doing his little pose.
they put the bride into Fortnite, Clemmer. So they did like this big whole thing with like a Fortnite red carpet with Quentin Tarantino. Yeah, it's
Kevin Spacey. Yeah. Go away. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. Why did I say sorry?
No, I do need another. His Christmas Eve thing was a letdown last year. I think he did an interview with Tucker Carlson as
Underwood. Yeah.
Yeah.
Frank Underwood. Yeah. Go back to being in the kitchen threatening to kill people.
He doesn't have a kitchen anymore.
Really hit.
He doesn't have a kitchen anymore. He's going to be standing over like a hotel thing with like the crappy Keurig and like the little packets. Yeah.
He needs to start breaking out different characters that he's played. Like, he needs
Kaiser Soze, K-Pax.
Yeah, yeah. He needs to, like, break out his seven character Usual Suspects.
If he came out as fucking K-Pax, I'd be there day one.
Eating that banana. Eating the banana hole. Yeah.
Yeah.
Folks, did you know the three T's of Thanksgiving? You got turkey, obviously. Probably the best part. But after that, you have the table for a gathering with family. Maybe not the best part. But then, most fun part, touchdowns. That's right. With DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Every touchdown could bring you closer to cashing in. Before dessert with DraftKings Sportsbook, all the action's in your hands. First touchdown, anytime touchdown, live bets, and more. Every play, every snap, every game counts. Big plays, bold calls, and bragging rights. When the games get good, the bets get better. Here's the best part. New customers bet just $5, only $5. And if your bet wins, you'll get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Use those bets on it's Shador season, Shador Sanders. Anytime touchdown, either a guy catching it from him, maybe he's going to run one in, we'll see. The Shador era. But whether it's Sanders or anybody, you can bet on them on DraftKings. When touchdowns happen, we feast down the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code DEBATE. That's code DEBATE, D-E-B-A-T-E. Bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets if your bet wins. In partnership with DraftKings, the crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, pass-through of per wager tax may apply in Illinois. 21 and over. Age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Restrictions apply. Bet must win to receive bonus bets which expire in 7 days. Minimum odds required. For additional terms and responsibilities, gaming resources, see dkng.co/audio. Limited time offer.
Things we've been watching and any physical media pickups. I saw Marty Supreme. It's amazing. I can't say much more. None of us really can. We have an embargo till December 1st. But I will say this, and excited for Kirk to come back and talk about this eventually. And I don't want to speak for him, but I will on this. I know he shares the same opinion as me. And him and I have talked about this for months. And I feel validated now in saying that I'm glad Timothy Chalamet did not win for the Bob Dylan role, because this will be significantly more gratifying for an original character, which he helped build from the ground up. Like, I'm sure he's, you know, he's saying like, I wanted to go back to back. No, this is it for his first Oscar, assuming he wins, which I do think he will. Like, this is it. Like, this is awesome. I loved it. I'll just put it that way. We'll have more on that in the coming weeks. I also watched Anniversary, the film Clemmer's been talking about for weeks.
You saw it?
Yeah, you can rent it. You can rent it. Yeah, they put it online. They buried it, remember?
What
horrendous.
A horrendous movie.
A nonsensical, over-the-top, garbage political thriller. But you need to watch it. You need to see it. Like, it's absurd. Absurd. I also watched Christie, which was just a normal biopic, normal sports biopic.
That was
biopic.
Right down the line, right? Like, that was like, it wasn't good, wasn't bad. I thought
It got interesting. I think I think it got interesting like right at the end, but then it finished. So you're just like,
You take an hour and a half to get to the good stuff. You watch literally 40 minutes of her just winning fight after fight. It's like, we understand she's a really good fighter. I get it. And then the last 30 minutes is stunning, and it just rushed and taped down at the end. Bizarre. Also, the worst Ben Foster performance I've ever seen.
Yeah, not a great Ben Foster.
Great, great actor too, damn.
And not here.
I saw Die My Love a couple weeks back. If I can mention, I love Die My Love. I would suggest it to probably nobody.
I'm seeing it tomorrow.
No, Jeff, do not share that opinion on here. If you say you like, people are... I've never seen our fans so mad at a movie that's like...
Yeah, I don't know.
That 10 people saw.
I like Die My Love, but I like crazy shit like that. Keeper from Osgood Perkins, I didn't love. Didn't work for me. Yeah.
Is that
Train Dreams? I'll let Kendrick talk about Train Dreams in a second. I really like Train Dreams. Thought it was fantastic. It's on Netflix right now. And then I saw Eternity early. I had a screener for that. I saw Eternity with Miles Teller, Elizabeth Olsen, and Cal Lipa, which was sweet and schmaltzy, and then completely ran out of real estate to do it. Just like that's got to be like 90 minutes at the absolute max, and it just overstays its welcome, or you kind of fall out of favor with it a little bit. Like I hate it. I'm sorry, I've done it 2 weeks in a row. I always think of the David Lynch clip where he's like, he goes, hold on, I see what the goes, who gives a fuck how long a scene is? Like, I am that, like, give me 5 hours of any movie. But this one, like, the idea just couldn't stretch enough. But Eternity is like a sweet enough movie where I'm sure some people will like it. And then It Welcome to Derry had one of the grossest body horror scenes I've ever seen in anything ever last week. That was fucking crazy. If you're sticking with It Welcome to Derry, I don't think it's great, but man, it's fucking gross. Chair Company's Elite. And I'm sticking with it. I'm pluribus. You all said my opinion stinks, but I'm sticking with it. I have to see. I'm seeing Sisu 2 today, which people seem to like.
Yeah.
And then I did get a screener for Jay Kelly, and I'm halfway through Jay Kelly. I will not say what I think, though. I will wait on Jay Kelly.
Halfway through is not a good
halfway
sign.
Through.
I got it this morning, and I didn't. I wanted to wait, but we had to record this, so I had to stop. I want to watch it so bad, so I had to physically pause to do this podcast.
It's just how Noah Baumbach intended.
Yep, just exactly. I won't be seeing that in theaters, though. It's not. You want to talk about Netflix? Like it's nowhere in the state of Texas. Ever, yeah. Anywhere. I can't find it.
It's hardly playing in New York City. Exactly.
George
it's playing at the
Clooney,
Paris.
Adam Sandler. It's just like fucking.
Which is the Netflix own theater.
Right. That's what I mean. That's where it's not playing many theaters even here.
Even like Crazy. Train Dreams is playing kind of like in a few theaters across the
city. Yeah, Kenjack, talk about Kenjack Gucci, whoever saw it, talk about Train Dreams. I thought it was excellent, but
I couldn't even get a ticket yesterday. That's how like people are dying to see this movie on a screen.
Train Dreams?
No, it sold out at IFC like 2 hours before the showtime yesterday. I was shocked. Dude,
it's gorgeous. I watched it a couple of days ago. It's like, it's very, and I said it and then like, I was like, at the time I was like, this is a good observation. And then like the second after I thought that to myself, I'm like, wait, actually everyone probably thinks this. It's very Terrence Malick, super talented Terrence Malick movie, like big meditation on big themes and like makes you kind of get in like this existential crisis type of thing. It's beautiful. Gorgeous. Joel Edgerton is amazing. Whole cast is too. Like William H. Macy shows up for 2 seconds of screen time and fucking obliterates it. He's so good. It's and one of those movies where like the ending was so well earned, like it really fucking crushed me, man. It was really damn good movie, and that's one I definitely want to watch in theaters because that it is that beautiful that it does not it should not be viewed through Netflix like on my TV. That's the one I gotta watch in a theater. Watch Being Eddie, the documentary, not really a documentary honestly, on Netflix about Eddie Murphy. It's more of like him narrating a highlight reel about himself, which isn't like the worst because like he tells like some stories and stuff, which is cool. Like he says, I think I told you this, Clemmer. He tells a story about how he thinks Yul Brynner wanted him to come home after a party and fuck his wife in front of him, which is just like it's random Eddie Murphy story you wouldn't hear otherwise. That was all right. Mighty Nine with the D&D thing that did in Prime is pretty cool. If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You, I finally caught.
Hell yeah.
And yeah, damn good movie. Jesus Christ, dude. She is. That's one where like if I could give someone like another nod, because I think she'll probably get nominated, right?
I think absolutely nominated.
Yeah. But she should get nominated. I didn't love the movie. I didn't hate it, but
she was unbelievable. So good. Pluribus, I'm starting to come around to you, Jeff, a little bit where I'm like, okay, we're slowing down a little bit here. We're in a way which I don't feel like that really happened as much in Saul or Breaking Bad. But we'll see. Sopranos have restarted and I'm working my way back through. Fucking just the greatest. You know which one I just did, which
so good.
Clemmer, I passed the stairwell, you know, scene, which I know you always talk about, basically a brutal one. But the one where, like, she was a hua, that is such a heartbreaking episode, too. Holy shit, dude. Man, is that brutal.
It's horrible. It's horrible.
And brilliantly acted, too. Pantaleonato is so good in this. What else? One Punch Man Season 3, maybe the worst anime I've ever seen in my entire life. It is unbelievable. They made us wait like 10 years to make a season 3, and then season 3 they legit do not animate this. Like they'll do a pan of a shot for they've been counting it out now because all the people are really pissed about it. They'll pan out of a shot for like 50 frames. Like they'll just sit there going panning out talking without animating anything. It is unbelievable how lazy and just fucking almost like cruel it is that they made this. Last Samurai Standing, also I did the first episode of. I need to go back through all that. It was very good. Nothing else that I can think of so far, though.
Nice. I saw just one more thing. It was Just an Accident from Jafar Panahi, which I think will be in the international feature nomination category from Iran. Very good. Very, very, very good movie. Tense, darkly funny. Has a Cohen energy to it. I like that quite a bit. I also watched for the first time ever Killing of a Chinese Bookie this week, which if you like Safdie movies, I would definitely recommend checking that out because it's very clearly heavily influential on their movies. Uncut Gems in particular. Like if you like Uncut Gems, I would highly recommend Killing of a Chinese Bookie. Great movie.
I saw Nuremberg, which I thought was pretty good. Michael Shannon is fantastic. Rami Malek's not that bad, and I thought Russell Crowe was great. It was powerful. It had, at one point, it has a 6-minute clip of the documentary that John Ford did about kind of the when the concentration camps got free, basically. The people were freed from there. So it's all real footage, and it was, like, obviously enormously powerful. It is a drab movie. It's all takes places in courthouses and in jails, so it's not like a pretty movie. It's also very dry. But I thought it was pretty effective. I thought it was a very good movie. I haven't heard a lot about Nuremberg, but I thought it's been kind of underrated.
Yeah, I really didn't love it.
Russell Crowe, in terms of presence, like, he just has a screen presence that's almost unmatched in terms of, like, any actor in my lifetime. But the accent did throw me off, and I don't think Rami Malek is bad, but he's the clear, like, center piece of the movie, which is, I don't know if he has that strength in him. I think he's a really talented number two, number three, but I don't know if he has shown me that he's a leading movie star yet.
Movie that's star fair. For sure, specifically, because, like, Mr. Robot, he's so good, but it's so yes. different. Yeah, you had a lot of time to flesh that shit out. So,
but he's always, you always have Shannon or Crow there too. So, like, he's not, like, alone too often.
And Leo Woodall.
And yep. John Slatter, who I love.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot Slatter. Of people in that. There's a ton of people in that movie.
Slatter, he's such a hater in that movie.
Oh, he is. He's great. When he's at his best.
Yeah, I picked up a couple things from the Criterion sale. Got Hell's Angels. That finally came in. Nice. The Grinch Steelbook, my Christmas movie collection growing. Got the Santa Claus, though. I didn't realize it comes with all three of them.
When does the Christmas movie watch start, Jeff?
Oh, yeah.
Right after Thanksgiving. Okay. But I don't dive like crazy into like my staples, like the Jingle All the Ways. Not a big the Escape Clause guy. Santa Claus 3. Won't be playing that one very often. And then finally got the least dented Transformers that I could possibly get. I'm no longer returning them. We're just gonna accept that they're dented. It's all right. Oh, also, so I don't like the Casino Steelbook that I have, so I got the new one. But it's kind of AI slop.
Oh, yeah, what
and
the
I kind of hate it.
Oh no!
But it's better than the one I had, so I had to get it. It's kind of AI slop. That's a little disappointing.
Look what they did to my boy.
Guys, enter the room, dick first. Blue Chew isn't just a tablet; it's a cheat code for your crotch. Stronger, harder, longer lasting. Like someone gave your downstairs a pep talk and a gym membership. Blue Chew is the original brand offering chewable tablets for better sex. This ain't a supplement. It's an erection resurrection. Guys, this isn't just about performance. This is about legacy, or third legacy. Give her group chat something to talk about. You know when you lay it down, they're talking about how it gets up. Nothing makes you more of a legend than a little Blue Chew. Discover your options at BlueChew.com. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. As always, get your first month of Blue Chew free. Just use promo code BIGSCREEN at checkout and pay $5 for shipping. That's it. Join Blue Chew's mission to upgrade humanity one thrust at a time. Head to BlueChew.com for details and safety info. And big thanks to Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast. Back to the show.
Top 10 Thanksgiving movie. Top 10 movies, excuse me, let me rephrase that. Now we're doing a list. Top 10 movies to watch on Thanksgiving. Yes. Doesn't need to be about Thanksgiving. Just a movie that would make sense to watch on Thanksgiving. The order of the draft is going to be first up Gooch, followed by myself, then Kenjek, then back-to-back Clemmer picks, then Kenjek, then myself, then Gooch, and then myself and Clemmer on the wheel I spun, got the last two picks. So Gooch, number one movie to watch on Thanksgiving. We are not defining this. This list should look absurd. So let's see. What do people think? What vibes of Thanksgiving the most?
There's no need to define it because there's a clear 1-1. And that's Greta Gerwig's Little Women.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Little Women is the perfect movie to watch on Thanksgiving.
It's cozy.
Fall foliage. It's got the cottages. It transitions perfectly into the Christmas season.
I think if I made my dad watch fucking...
It's about family. It's about love. It is the perfect Thanksgiving movie.
That's a perfectly fine number two pick. You can't have that number one on this list.
It's number one.
If I made my dad watch that on Thanksgiving, he'd shoot me.
He doesn't ever feel like Bob Odenkirk returning home from the Civil War.
Fuck.
Ever.
There's a clear 1-1 for this. This is insane.
No, it's different. No, we got to remember it's movies that you watch on Thanksgiving versus Thanksgiving movie.
It's not a Thanksgiving movie. It's a movie to watch on Thanksgiving.
No, this is the Queer 1-1 is what you watch on Thanksgiving. What are we doing here?
We're doing Little Women.
Little Women.
I'm not in those files.
Okay. Well. All right. Whatever. That's interesting. I can't hate on it. Whatever, I guess. The vibe is there, at least to an extent. I can understand the vibe. I'm going to pick the only movie. So I have a list of six movies I was going to pick from. This is the only one that's about Thanksgiving. And that's Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Thank you.
It's the only It's the only one that fits both sides of the coin of like being a Thanksgiving movie and being on like a movie that even if it was about Christmas, like it would still have the vibe of like a movie you watch on Thanksgiving. So I'm going Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, aka the prequel to I'm blanking on every
movie ever.
Uncle Buck, Home Alone?
No, from last year, A Real Pain. A Real Pain 1, as they call it. So yeah, that's an easy one for me. That would have been 1-1. That's number two on our list.
I watch it almost every year on Thanksgiving. It's fantastic.
I watch Little Women almost every year on Thanksgiving.
Well, I'll tell you what, you already ran out of your first picks. I'm curious if you're going to have in a few picks, but Ken Jack is up next.
I shouldn't have made fun of Gooch because like, there's a movie I have that I watch almost every Thanksgiving because it's just, I don't know if it's just because it's especially been streaming a lot around this time of year usually. I don't even know if it's streaming now. I probably should have checked. Has absolutely fuck all to do with Thanksgiving. It's not even particularly a great movie, I would say. Mark Wahlberg's The Italian Job. F. Gary Gray. I don't know why this movie just always seems to come on around this time. And every time I can watch these guys like go do this heist with Donald Sutherland and get that little jazz or funky music going with Mos Def, fucking Charlize Theron as hot as ever. Edward Norton, cool, really good bad guy in this. Seth Green, Station Statham being sexy as fuck. Like, it's, I like that movie a lot. I don't even particularly love the Michael Caine version. Like, I just, something about this movie, it gives me like that feeling of watching it as a kid on FX, was that Inside the DVD, whatever that show
was. We were the right age when this came out to like be into that.
Yeah. Like, I watched it, I think, in theaters and then like a million times on FX after that. And there's just something about getting around this time period where I'm like, if I'm like, not here at like a relative's house or whatever, I'm watching The Italian Job. With Mark Wahlberg, and it's a charming movie. I like it.
I can't really hate it. I think that's actually a great pick. Like when we were talking about this list, like that's the type of vibe I was looking for. Like I get that. It wouldn't be my pick, but I like that. That's a good one. Back to back picks now.
All right, let me just be clear. Little Women is a fantastic pick for Thanksgiving. That makes a lot of sense. It just Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is such a great thing. Italian Job is an insane pick. Like, absolute lunacy.
We're making sauce watching the Italian Job.
That's just insane. Uh-huh. Okay, so I'm going to go with the original Rocky. You have a Thanksgiving scene that will make you so thankful that your family's not like this, that you will appreciate even the most annoying, horrible relative you have. You'd be like, well, at least they're not like Paulie. And plus, Rocky's a great movie. You get a little Americana in there. You get it all.
That's Rocky. A good pick. No, I like that. That is a good pick. That matches the energy on Thanksgiving. Yeah,
very like family is what you make it to. That's like it's a good one too. If like especially if you don't have a lot of family around, because that's like a lot of family is what you make it type deal.
And then plus, I think it kind of hits for everybody. And you got the old people in the house aren't complaining either because they get to watch Rocky.
Dude, I just hit the part in Sopranos where Bert, what's his name, dies too.
Oh yeah, Bert Young. Yeah,
he's Bert Young dies in it. Oh. Yeah. Such a good scene.
My other one is going to be Chef.
That was my next pick.
Are you serious?
Yeah, because explain. I'll tell you my explanation.
Oh, so my reasoning was it's about food. Mm-hmm. It's about family. It's like you might have like a wide variety of people in the house, like ages from like, you know, whatever, a kid to old man. Everyone can enjoy it. It's quick. It's funny. It kind of delivers. It's about food and family.
It is. I mean, that's actually probably a better explanation. But I was just saying, like, if one, it's the easiest movie to recommend to anybody. I mean, like, it's so simple to recommend. It's funny. It's nice. It's got incredible looking food. And for me, it's like when you watch that movie, when you watch Chef, you get immediately very hungry. And no better day to watch a movie that makes you hungry than on fucking Thanksgiving. So Chef is perfect for that. It's a great pick. Great pick. Ken Jack, you have number six.
There's one where I definitely watch it disproportionately around this time of year. I think I'm gonna have it too.
Perfect Storm. What are the Bad Wahlberg.
Bad Wahl. The Planet of the Apes 2001.
Tim Burton version.
Yeah, Tim Burton version. No, there is a movie where I watched it just personally around this time, and I think it's because my dad like loves it, and it just like registers more now. We go with Braveheart. This one where it's like we sit around. My mom loves this shit too. Like she loves like she's a big Anglophile, so she loves like all that sort of era of I don't know whatever. And she loves Mel Gibson, as I'm assuming most moms do. Maybe not anymore. But yeah, there's something about Braveheart. It's just so awesome. It's a great watch, like for like a history white dad. You know what I mean? And I think there's something about it that just hits that speech. You're going ape shit. You get a little bit of the romance, whatever. But like all the action scenes in this are beautiful. Like say whatever you want about Mel Gibson, which you can say a lot. Dude knew how to direct movies, man. He this is a fucking such a good spectacle, and I love every time I've rewatched it. I've liked it even more. So I really like Braveheart. And you could, and I think you can make arguments about the Oscar stuff, which I think some people don't love it as an Oscar winner or whatever. But I love it. I think it's fucking
awesome. The ambiance is very Thanksgiving too. Like it just, even though it's not American whatsoever, but it's just like the ambiance of it is very
spiritually American.
You want to talk about family, you want to talk about arguing, you want to talk about being around each other, and the weather and feel of the movie, the look that fits Thanksgiving, going Knives Out, number 7. Good family dynamics movie. It also just is set at the perfect fall time, late fall, early winter energy. I think Knives Out is like, I'm going to watch it on Thanksgiving because I'm going to watch both the Knives Out movies before going to see Wake Up Dead Man this weekend. Knives Out kind of fits that bill perfectly. So that's my number, which it was in Alamo last week. I didn't get a chance to see it. I did see a bunch of other things, but they did release it in theaters again, which one of the better theater experiences in the last 10 years. Gooch, you have number 8.
Yeah, this is tough because that absolutely was my next pick, but I'm just going to jump into Christmas, actually, because I typically do
watch Christmas movies. So I think there's one perfect one to start off with this.
Really?
Like a perfect starter, which I don't do. I don't watch on Thanksgiving, but I'm curious what you say.
I was going to say White Christmas because we do watch that movie with the family like Friday after Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay.
Almost every single year. It's just lovely. Could watch it Thanksgiving night. Doesn't matter. It just immediately immerses you into the Christmas mood. And it's got that old, like, it's 1940s, so it's, like, toothless and has, like, nothing that's going to offend really anyone inside of it. And I love the music and the performances and how beautifully it's colored. I really love that movie.
That is a good pick. I do like that pick. It's like as a kickoff one. There were two in my head. One, I think Jingle All the Way has the energy of, like, Black Friday.
Yeah.
But it's set way too up against Christmas. Like it's like the late shopper. For me, this is not going to be my next pick. But if I were to pick a Christmas movie, it'd be The Santa Claus. Because The Santa Claus, for much of the movie, is set in the build-up to Christmas, which I like. So it kind of like matches that like lead-up. But I'm going to go with a movie that kind of feels, again, family, together, a lot of food. The ambiance of the movie is very fall-winter, and that's Fantastic Mr. Fox. A little... Imagine Thanksgiving at Wes Anderson's house, how perfectly everything is put together on the table. Okay. One gravy boat on each side of the table. Like it would be perfect. Even the way Wes Anderson would take apart the turkey would be symmetrical. Something like Fantastic Mr. Fox, one of his best works. Just one of the better movies I've ever seen. Fits kind of the bill here, I think.
Wish you could get back to that. Jesus.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, just had a great movie this year.
Sure didn't.
I like the one last though 2 years ago. I was okay on this one. Asteroid City, I did enjoy quite a bit, but we don't have to make this a Wes Anderson argument. Climber has it number 2 worst movie of the year. If
no, say. I don't. It's not that low. It's bad.
He has it below Soul on Fire.
That's Jack Buck true. Movie. I think it's definitely my bottom 2025 of the year. I think.
What's your last pick?
So my backup was a Wes Anderson movie. I'm not going to use it. I almost went Royal Tenenbaums, but I'm not going to.
Oh, that would make sense too. That would fit.
That's almost too dour. Like so sad.
That's my only thing. Is like so. I'm going to go with The Godfather. You throw.
Oh, I kind of like that. I kind
of
like.
It has
that.
A lot of food in there. Plus, you can take a nap. You wake up. You've seen it a million times. You're not going
to. Yeah.
And maybe, just maybe, there is a young person there watching it for the first time that now they love classic movies because they got to see The Godfather. The Godfather is always a winner. You can put that on 365 days a year, and so it's a good show.
This list, like if you just saw the list and didn't see the title of like,
yeah, so top 10 movies to watch on Thanksgiving. We have the Greta Gerwig Little Women, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, the Mark Wahlberg Italian Job, Rocky, Chef, Braveheart, Knives Out, White Christmas, Fantastic Mr. Fox, and The Godfather. Actually, you know what the movie I actually saw on Thanksgiving was Catching Fire, so you should definitely check that out. I actually, another one I had to back up was Ratatouille, just food movie, good for the family. Kind of fits that if you want to look at like food and things that make you hungry. Thought that kind of worked.
Yeah, too French.
The Last Samurai, yeah, probably have on there.
Yeah,
Tom Cruise.
Ed Zwick always said Thanksgiving was his favorite holiday.
I always do. I do Last Samurai, then I do The Great Wall with Matt Damon to close
the
out
Great Wall.
Yeah, every year.
I do love how like blunt he's been about that movie in retrospect, Mark Wahlberg. He's just like, yeah, like I wanted to get my daughter a house, so that just did The Great Wall.
Wait, Wahlberg or Damon?
Or sorry, not Damon. Sorry,
yeah.
Also, like Pedro Pascal's in that. Like
Kimmel called the Chinese ponytail movie.
Yeah,
starring Matt Damon.
Hey, y'all, it's Gooch. Congratulations on making it this far into Project Big Screen Episode 8. I'm going to tell you how to join our fan rankings. And all that is a follow from us on Letterboxd to be a part of the community. All I want you to do is to comment below, whether you're listening on Spotify or watching on YouTube. I want you to comment below with your favorite local mom and pop theater. A lot of us traveling for the holidays, going home, I'm sure we're going to be hitting those local theaters. Ken Jack talked earlier about the Clare Ridge Theater out in Montclair, New Jersey. I'll be home going to the Kentucky Theater in downtown Lexington. This is a big time of year for them, so I want you to give a shout out to your favorite local mom and pop theater and comment that with your Letterboxd username below. Again, whether you're listening on Spotify or YouTube, also make sure that you are subscribed to our channels. Subscribe where you watch, subscribe where you listen. Make sure you like, comment. All those interactions really do. They make such a big difference for us. We appreciate all the support we've gotten so far. Thank you so much for listening. Now back to the show.
That's it. Good list. Yeah. Good kind of dual movie of one of the best of the year, then one that I think is like one of the more interesting movies to talk about this year in terms of release. Some fun news. And that's it. So happy Thanksgiving to everybody. We'll be back, I guess, on December 1st. That's it for November episodes. Our first release of December will be that Monday, December 1st for Ken Jack, Clemmer, and Gooch. I'm Jeff Filo. We'll talk to you next time.
I'm here to help.
On August 21st,
we have a story.
Mutiny arrives on the big screen.
Who are you?
It is, trust me.
Jason Statham stars in the action movie to end your summer.
What do you want?
Vengeance.
Mutiny. Rated R.
Work hard and hydrate hard with Body Armor Flash IV. Whether you're working in extreme heat or powering through a long shift, Body Armor Flash IV delivers faster, longer-lasting hydration. With more than 2,000 milligrams of electrolytes, vitamins B and C, and zinc, coconut water, and no artificial sweeteners, flavors, or dyes, Body Armor Flash IV keeps you performing at your best. Get Body Armor Flash IV at your local 7-Eleven.
Iconic summer moments deserve an iconic drink. Reach for Mountain Dew, an American original. From its beginnings in the foothills of Tennessee to your biggest summer yet. The refreshing citrus kick of Mountain Dew is the perfect companion to your American summer adventures. Enjoy the refreshing citrus kick of Mountain Dew, tasting great since 48. Look for Mountain Dew in stores near you at MountainDew.com. That's MountainDew.com.
At Boar's Head, we've been going back to school for over 115 years. And this year, every school lunch is reason to celebrate with the flavors your kids love and the exceptional quality you expect. Helping you make school lunch fresh, easy, and delicious. Ring the bell. The deli is open. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.